Hey, this is Kevin Sorbo here, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. And really, do some thinking, seriously. Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Well, thank you once again to Kevin Smith for doing that great introduction for us, and can you believe it? This is episode 32 already of Thinking Outside the Long Box. My name is Thomas Strange, and I'm coming to you from Boston with my good friend Tom Boucher. Tommy, how you doing?
I am sweaty in my very, very humid apartment.
Why is your apartment so humid today?
Because it rained and it's been hot out.
You got an air conditioner, don't you? You got a dehumidifier, don't you?
Don't have a dehumidifier and need to put the air conditioner in.
Well, you need a couple bucks, Tommy? You need someone to lift an air conditioner? I'll come over. What the hell?
Well, yeah, I was going to charge you gym membership for it.
Yeah, that's my workout. And Josh, how about you? Do you have a under boob sweat going?
No, my air conditioning is cranking hard, and I am sipping breakfast stout out of a Treehouse brewing glass.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look, a grown-up. Great. How about you, Mikey? How are you doing down in Louisiana? That's some of the worst heat I've ever experienced.
I'm doing all right. I got Jameson on ice in my awesome Johnny Skywalker glass.
Oh, I broke mine. I got to get another
one. Did you get that from IanLino.com?
IanLino.com?
I did get it from IanLino.com.
Wait a minute. IanLino.com? Have we ever mentioned them before?
I can't recall ever talking
like
about it.
I feel like I've heard it somewhere. Yeah. I mean, I know it's spelled IanLino.com.
And just so I can round it out, I'm drinking what I call a Harvey Bullock, which is a glass full of ice filled with all the dregs of all the whiskey bottles I had left over from the weekend. And I should have two big round ones in there, round ice cubes, as my buddy Tommy pointed out, because you really should have big balls when you're drinking a Bullock. But we're not talking about Harvey Bullock today. As much as I would love to do a whole episode dedicated to him and him alone, today we're talking about the Fantastic Four and some of our favorite issues and some of our favorite appearances. Who wants to do the intro to the Fantastic Four?
I think that's Mike. Mike is the Fantastic Four. Got woke crap.
Oh, Tommy, the Fantastic Four reading tonight. Go ahead, Tommy. Tell us a little bit about the Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four. What couldn't be said about the Fantastic Four? Reed Richards corralled his girlfriend, his roommate, his girlfriend's brother into going up into space in an untested rocket ship, and they all got exposed to cosmic rays and came back down to Earth a little freaky. And by freaky, I mean Mr. Fantastic, of course, can stretch and move his body about into any shape that he sees fit, which is why we call him Mr. Fantastic. And then there's Invisible Girl, who can turn herself invisible or can project force fields around herself or around other things. And then there's the Human Torch, which can basically turn his body into flame into such great heat that it is almost supernova. And, of course, there is the ever-lovable Ben Grimm, the Thing. The Thing who cannot get away from his roots growing up near Yancey Street with the Yancey Street Gang. And that is the Fantastic Four in a nutshell. Created by Stan Lee back early in Marvel's history.
Yeah, they were the first superhero team for Marvel Comics. They were created because the publisher for Marvel Comics wanted a superhero team because he was golfing with the publisher for DC Comics, and the publisher for DC was bragging about how good the sales were for the Justice League. So Marvel Comics' first family is the Fantastic Four, and they're a great example of the space race that was going on back in 1961.
And what was the name of the thing that first gave them their superpowers? Didn't they blame it on the Van Allen belt?
I've always known it as cosmic rays.
Cosmic rays.
I believe in the first iterations that I remember reading, they blamed it all on the Van Allen belt for some reason, which I thought was kind of funny. Like the Van Allen belt was just up there turning people into monsters. I'll look that up while we talk about our first, best, and freshest issue. Josh, what was your favorite Fantastic Four issue?
So I'm probably going to be the outlier here because I don't like the Fantastic Four. I know Mike's a big fan. Mike, I know you've cosplayed Reed Richards.
I don't blame you. It's just that you haven't read the right Fantastic Four. And
that may be true, and I can't wait to hear. I can't wait to hear your guys' favorite issues so I can try to explore these guys a little more. I don't know. I just didn't like the dynamic. I was never really enamored with the team's power set, and I just never I never really got into them. And clearly they don't translate well to the big screen, as there have been many and a multitude of failed attempts to do so.
You've never seen the Roger Corman movie, obviously.
I was going to say, that one's kind of funny.
That is just a thing of
beauty. I'll have to look into that.
I assume it's on YouTube?
No, don't watch it. Nobody watch that. I was joking. I was being facetious. Please, dear God, do not send us letters to luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com complaining that you wasted an hour and a half of your life because I recommended that movie.
And just so I'm clear, I did look it up. A solar flare caused the Van Allen radiation belts to be charged with ultra-high levels of cosmic radiation during the Fantastic Four's first space flight.
But so I do like that it was 1961 when the – or 60 or 61 when the comics started. You know, Sputnik was in the eyes of the American public as it streaked across the sky. And I did like the fact that they were sort of the first real – I think astronauts that had, you know, became super. So I like the origin story. I just I never got into the subset of powers and the characters themselves.
All right. Well, Mikey, you're the biggest fan, so why don't you tell us your favorite run of the Fantastic Four?
All right. So, Josh, this is what I'm going to recommend you check out. Now, my favorite run is the Secret Wars, which was just this past year. You can't just dive into that and read it because you will be totally confused. Jonathan Hickman is the best writer of the Fantastic Four there has ever been. And I'm going to recommend that you check out the Fantastic Four. It's the 1998 to 2012 series. He's got a 32-issue run starting in issue 570.
And start them out slow, Mikey.
Yeah. Oh, this is perfect. Start in
32 issues.
That's 14 years of comics.
Just issue 570 to issue 611. But at the same time, you're going to also have to read the FF from years 2010 to 2012. There's 23 issues in that series. And if you read, I guarantee, if you read these 55 books and do not love the Fantastic Four, I will apologize.
Okay. Wow.
So that is a stunning endorsement, right?
That
just makes you want to run right out to Comixology and drop $110.
I think you should, because the great thing about Jonathan Hickman's run is that he is such an intricate storyteller that he will start a thread in one issue and just leave it alone. And then three or four issues later, you discover how important that one thread that he started up later on is. And everything builds on top of everything. And it's the best part about this whole run is the Fantastic Four is at heart a family. And now you said the Fantastic Four have never had a good movie. I challenge you to watch The Incredibles because that is the best Fantastic Four movie there is.
It's a great Fantastic Four movie. So you're saying this writer is great at planting Nabokov's cosmic ray gun in a storyline so we can see it later.
Yes. The introduction of the two kids into the storyline makes it even better because the three-year-old who is the intellectual equivalent to Reed Richards but has no moral compass is just an amazing character, Valera, who becomes friends with Uncle Doom. It is just a great series. You got to check it out. And if you're only going to read one comic, Josh, then I recommend you go into the Fantastic Four's FF series, issue number 17, because it is Johnny Storm living with Peter Parker. And Peter Parker just wants to get Johnny Storm out of his house because he'll, like, go to, into the closet to grab a coat and he'll fall into the negative zone because Reed Richard put a portal there just so Johnny could get into it easy. You know, it's just crazy stuff. If you're going to, I know you're a Spider-Man fan, so check it out, because in the FF series, after at one point Johnny Storm is thought to be dead and Peter Parker replaces him. And the conversation that Peter has with Franklin after Johnny Storm's alleged death is amazing, because Franklin has cosmic powers and thinks, if I had just done something more, I could have saved my uncle. And the conversation that he has with Peter Parker, where Peter says, I had the same thing happen, it made me tear up. Because these two shared such a connection and over their guilt about not doing enough to save a family member that it was just incredible. So check it out.
So one of my favorite Fantastic Four stories was The End by Alan Davis. He wrote and drew the art for this series. It was about 7 issues long, came out in around 2007. In it, Reed Richards is finally able to create his utopian society through his technological marvels. The Earth is about to join the Galactic Federation. There's a huge battle with Dr. Doom and the Fantastic Four. And in it, Reed's children, Ben and Valera, die, and they're taking out Dr. Doom. And after this big battle, the Fantastic Four kind of split up, not just, you know, it just because of the tragedy. They just happen to go their own way. Reed buries himself in work. Sue Storm starts becoming an archaeologist. Ben Grimm lives his life with his lovely wife, Alicia. They have a couple of kids on Mars. Ben is able to transform into human form at will. And Johnny Storm takes over as kind of the leader of the Avengers. And it just kind of happens through attrition. They didn't really plan it to be this way, but it just happened to be that way. And Reed Richards gets a little obsessed in his work, trying to find a way to travel amongst the stars quicker. And Sue Storm realizes that they can go back in time and save their kids. And the Fantastic Four kind of reunite, and they're able to pull their kids out of that battle at the last minute and save the day. And it was just kind of an interesting little story. You know, Reed Richards, he gets his dream of instantaneous travel in space. The problem is it's through the Phantom Zone, and Annihilus gets involved and takes over everything and kind of ruins it. So it's your classic Fantastic Four story in that things seem to be going all right, and then they kind of go to crap right away. But I really like some of the kind of background stuff in this. The story had the HRBs, Herbies, which were also in the Fantastic Four cartoon that I watched when I was growing up. And, you know, Reed Richards, even though he's like this massive science intellect, he still can't solve all the world's problems.
Well said, Tommy. I haven't read that particular run myself, but I'm interested enough to give it a shot. That brings me to my favorite Fantastic Four run.
I'm sorry, can I just interrupt just real quick? LT, you mentioned Annihilus from the Negative Zone?
Yes.
Phantom in that Zone, comic right? No, Phantom Zone Superman. This is the Negative
sorry.
Zone.
But Negative Zone.
Stay with us, Tommy. Come on.
In that issue number 17 that I recommended to you, Josh, Peter Parker gets really upset when he opens the door and Annihilus is taking a shit on his toilet.
There are two things about that. The first of which, we know Annihilus doesn't put the seat down, right? He's totally got it up. He's big enough where he needs the whole pot. There is no seat here, and there's no way he's putting it down afterwards. And clearly, that's a mess that's not going to flush.
Well,
I was surprised. You guys are making a huge assumption about whether or not it was number one or number two, or perhaps number four. Annihilus is an alien with a totally different anatomy, guys.
I was just
maybe he'd be sitting down.
Yeah, I was just shocked it wasn't an upper decker.
If Annihilus takes an upper decker, that poisons the world.
He's evil. There's no courtesy flush. This guy's doing everything wrong in your bathroom. everything. Look,
I think as soon as it hits the bowl, it's going to crack the porcelain. I think Peter's going to have one hell of a mess.
Sorry, I didn't mean to go off on a tangent.
Go ahead. And we haven't yet. I'm not a huge fan either. I like the cartoon. I liked a few comic books. I loved a lot of team-ups. But my favorite thing about the Fantastic Four was the runs where Sue Storm became Malice.
Oh, sexy Sue Storm.
Sexy Sue Storm did it for me.
Hot mom Sue Storm.
Oh, man. The super dominatrix crazy outfit she would wear. And even when Malice wasn't totally in control, but little in control, and she'd wear that really crazy, super sexy Fantastic Four uniform with the boob hole with the number 4 on it. You know what I'm talking about. Don't be quiet now, guys.
I do.
That was always cool. But I also like the fact that the first time that Malice took over, Reed Richards had to mentally abuse his wife to put the persona down. He had to dominate and humiliate his wife to destroy her self-confidence enough to get rid of her dominant personality. If that doesn't say volumes about where the Invisible Girl came from and, you know, what the dynamic was in those early comic books, I don't know what does.
Yeah, in those early comics, I mean, look, for... She's a woman, not a girl, but she's called the Invisible Girl, and it's perfect. She's there, but she's not seen. She's just kind of in the background. And then the first bunch of Fantastic Four comics, she's just there for Reed Richards or the other members of the Fantastic Four to save from either Doctor Doom or Namor.
But, she was the ultimate damsel in distress, and her powers were also, of course, not at the time – ancillary. Just, I can be invisible, I can do a little scouting, and I can put up a force field and protect us, but that was about it. She does learn to use those much more in a offensive way later on, but, you know, she was really just thought of as kind of just the girl to save for a lot of comic books.
And she really does become more powerful over time. Because she starts out literally just being able to protect herself with a force field. Later, she becomes one of the most powerful super beings in the Marvel Universe with her force fields.
Yeah, she at one point in the Hickman run, she threatens Dr. Doom because Doom has been suffering from brain damage. And she's like, look, you get out of line, I'm going to put a little invisible bubble inside that brain of yours. And you think you had brain damage before? Wait till you see what I do to you. So she's a badass.
Yeah, she now that she controls the power a little bit better, she can do a lot of crazy stuff. But I did like the Malice character, and the Malice, her dominant personality, pretty much told it like it was when it comes to the rest of the members of the Fantastic Four. Put them in line a little bit and helped Sue, when Sue merged with that Malice personality later, was able to be a little bit more forceful, a little bit more dominant. That Malice personality goes away and gets projected out of her later, but I think it was good for storylines and good for Sue Storm if she were a real person.
Wasn't Malice one of the mutants from the Reavers?
That's not what Malice was actually a part of her personality that was brought forward by the Psychonaut. Or being like that, I can tell you that. I can tell you exactly who because I have it brought up here. It was Psycho Man and Hate Monger during an attack on New York City that made Malice come to the forefront, and it was just a part of her personality.
I did love the Reavers, though, so, you know, as a tangent, they were great.
Oh, and if we're going to go off on a tangent, Josh, now that we're done, everyone's talked about the Fantastic Four.
We have one more thing to talk about. Who won the Fantastic Foe?
Oh, yeah.
Graphic novel giveaway, LT.
Sorry, we have a graphic novel to give away.
Friend of the podcast, Dylan, who was on our Cyborg episode, actually won this month's Fantastic Foe comic graphic novel.
And who was his favorite podcaster?
Yeah, we just won.
It was probably Mike.
Yeah, it was Mike because he gives him comics.
Mike's the only one he knows.
Yeah,
he also said Mr. Tom was pretty funny, but I'm not sure which Mr. Tom he's talking about. So,
I know which one.
It's geographical bias.
Or should do you lucky bastard?
Bribes comics. So,
I also bribed him with a magnet too.
going to send that kid a Christmas present to see who wins next year.
In other words, right. Mikey once again bought Dylan's favor.
Nothing wrong with buying favor, guys.
That's right.
So
do it all the time.
So how can somebody win a graphic novel from us, LT?
All they need to do is write into us at luckybastard@outsidethelawnbox.com and tell us who their favorite podcaster is, what we're doing right, and what we're doing wrong. And they'll be entered into a drawing where the lucky bastard will pick out the winner of that month's graphic novel.
What's this month's graphic novel?
I don't even think we've chosen one yet. Which graphic novel should we give away, Mike?
I don't know. You're the one with the graphic novels. You tell us.
I think you loaned your friend the first comic he'd ever read, Saga. Why don't we give away the first issue of Saga?
We can give away Saga.
So that's a great idea, Josh. You have the best ideas.
Do you have Saga?
I don't. Yeah, that's why it's a great idea, because I don't have to give mine away.
I will certainly send my Saga to a lucky fan.
So Josh has volunteered to give away his copy of Saga, and I hope the lucky bastard is you. And it can be you if you write into luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com. And thank you, Josh, for mouthing that along so I didn't screw it up again. And Josh,
I'm helping.
You've always been helpful. And as long as you're helping, Josh, do you have a tangent for us?
Yeah, so I am going to go right to the most popular thing going on right now. And I'll have to say,
Kim Kardashian and Taylor Swift's feud?
Pokemon Go.
Now,
wait, I'm not going to say we're going to talk about dog fighting? Is that what we're going to talk about? Because that's all Pokemon Go is.
Pokemon Go can
playing Pokemon Go. Who's playing?
I'm playing.
Point to yourself. Just admit it. Okay. And now I'm going to tell you the application. So someone was like, Pokemon Go, I don't want to play that. But in a comic book vein, I saw a guy post, and he's like, you know what I really want? He's like, I want Spider-Man Go, where you have to go out and snap pictures of Spider-Man for J. Jonah Jameson. So you got to capture him in different places.
That would be hilarious. I'd play that game all day.
Brilliant. I would play that game.
I would play that game.
It would be very
hilarious. If only we knew somebody who could write code, Tom.
I can't write code.
Your wife, Tom. Dr. Strange could do this.
That's true. My wife could probably do this, and we could probably make $1 million, except she hates anything to do with games or visual applications. She likes numbers and big number theory games. And let me tell you how I've been using Pokemon Go for good. You guys want to hear this?
You've been walking out to traffic?
Always the pessimist. So let me tell you how Pokemon Go can be used for good. Here in Boston, a lot of people who play Pokemon Go go to the children's hospital and they drop lures. You get these free lures and they bring Pokemon to the lure. More lures you drop down, the more rare Pokemons might show up. So if you drop a bunch in the lobby at the children's hospital, all those kids that are up in those beds don't have to go out. Fortunately,
so the real question is, how many rare Pokemon have you stolen from ailing children?
Actually, I just drop them and leave. Just drop, and they last for like hours. I just drop them and take off. So and
you know what a pedophile you're sounding like? I go to the children's hospital and drop lures for children. Sick children.
They're the easiest to catch. Children. Shut up, Mike. Also, I was in the Boston Common, and there was a bunch of people gathered around the thing, and they were just doing it together. They all had a bunch of lures dropped, and they were having a very pleasant day in the sun, capturing Pokemon together and talking about how many they got. And you know, people who don't like Pokemon Go are spending too much time hating something pretty benign.
I actually
erased it from my phone because it was taking up too much memory, and I just didn't like it that much. So I dropped all my lures at the hospital a couple of days ago, and now I'm out. But it was okay. It was kind of fun.
I went on a 4.5-mile hike with my wife the other day, and she got 3 Pokemon on it.
Well, that's nice.
I went for a run, but, you know, no Pokemon.
No Pokemon. Because you're not playing the game. You got to put it on the phone first.
Yeah, that's the part that escapes me.
It's kind of fun. I mean, they show up in kind of a VR setting, and you throw a little ball at them. There's nothing wrong with this game. We played Magic the Gathering, guys, right?
Yeah.
So the Everybody. Whole premise is you're capturing animals, and then after you've got them in the ball, you can throw them at other animals, and they can fight to the death. Is that what that's the game, right?
You can throw them at other captured animals that have been forcefully encapsulated in the ball to the death. Yes.
This is actually why I stopped playing the game. I was like, I never made my Pokemon fight anybody. I would collect them and I'd check on them and I'd give them candy and I'd feed them. And then like I'd be at a gym and gyms are where you can fight. You have to go to a gym to fight your Pokemon because you have to go to a gym.
Oh shit. I was just joking. I didn't know you could actually fight your Pokemon. That's horrible.
That's the thing. I looked at all these monsters and I have all these cute little Pokemon. I'm like, screw this. That thing's humongous. I'm not making my salamander fight a giant lizard god. This is stupid. So that's kind of why I'm out of the game.
Where are the gyms in the real world?
They're actual real world gyms. You got to go to a real world gym to fight your Pokemon against each other.
I thought some of them were also big public places.
There are a couple other that are public places. They're all supposed to be gyms, but the windmill at the IEW electrical thing also happens to be a gym, and a couple of tea stops are gyms. So I think they added some extra where they needed some gyms to fill in some space. But they are, all the gyms downtown are gyms.
And I believe Pokemon Go is kind of built on the backbone of the other mobile game, Ingress.
That's not really true. I mean, I played a lot of Ingress, and they're just not that similar.
No, the geographical data that they use for the maps is the same. So, like, the reason that, like a monument is a place where a Pokemon might be is the reason because Ingress has that as a point. So the geographical data is shared.
Well, as long as we're done with that, why don't we go to the front of the long box? And today in front of the long box, we're doing something a little different. What are we doing a little different this week, Mike?
So we have one of our listeners, Darren, who is one of my coworkers. He's never read a comic book before, so I've given him Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples to read. So I'm going to play the interview with him. It's only about 2 minutes long, and then we'll come back. And Darren, how long have you been reading comics?
I have never really read comics. I know what they are. I've never really read any comic books.
So this was your first exposure to reading comic books. What was the first book that you read?
Saga.
And what is Saga about?
It appears to be about a couple who have a baby who are on the run from several different people. They're from different, well, not different planets. One's from a planet, one's from a moon, from two different sides of a war. And some people are chasing them.
And what did you think about the comic book?
I thought it was okay. As I was reading it, it didn't seem to go anywhere. I was hoping it would go somewhere faster. It just seemed to be, here's a couple of characters. They're being chased by several different people. They have a baby. It just didn't go anywhere.
All right. And when you were reading it, did this strike you as what you thought a comic book would be like?
No, not necessarily. As I was getting to the end, I got to the end, I was like, it's okay. But I started thinking, well, maybe this wasn't intended for a novice such as me. Maybe this was a book for someone who is a comic book reader who knows, hey, this is going somewhere. They can just, as a beginner, I was like, where's this going? Is it getting somewhere? Now, granted, the concept is pretty cool. I thought some of the characters were really cool in it. It had, some space stuff going on, guy with this magical sword, but he doesn't want to fight anyone. It seemed like it had something going, but it just didn't get there in the first book.
So you guys have read Saga. What do you guys think of it?
So I love Saga. It was great.
I like Saga.
I mean, I love Saga. I think Saga's fantastic for a lot of different reasons. I love the interplanetary ideas and the fact that it's kind of like a race-based story and how everyone is after them as sort of being an interracial couple from a galactic perspective. But I think my curiosity, Mike, for this is first guy's comic, why Saga? Give me the lowdown on that.
All right. So he had a conception of comics that I wanted to try to turn on its side. So that's why the three comics that I gave him to read were Saga, March, and Hawkeye. I didn't want to give him the typical superhero story. I wanted to give him something different to see. And he didn't like Saga, but it's because he felt it didn't go anywhere. But again, even with the title, you can kind of figure that it's going to be a long, drawn-out series. I think he's just not used to reading. You know, he's used to reading a novel, which is the character is going to have a full arc after the story. But in one graphic novel on a continuing series, you're not going to have that full story arc that you would have in a normal book.
Right. So I was wondering, why didn't you give him something that gave him that typical story arc, like maybe like The Crow or something where he could read one book, or even The Watchmen maybe?
Yeah, I wanted to keep something small because, you know, the first five issues of – it's only the first five issues of Saga. And yeah. I wanted to give him something that's outside the box, the long box, as you will, that he wasn't expecting. So I thought a magical sci-fi mixed race adventure would be something that he wasn't expecting. And he wasn't expecting it. And
oh, yeah.
So you gave Josh like 78 issues to read to get him into Fantastic Four. But this guy, like three issues, give it a shot, Pally. And I love the fact that he doesn't read comic books, but he listens to our podcast. Well, that takes us off from the front of the long box. LT, what do you got the back of the long box for us?
Well, since Mikey wasn't really going in the front of the long box, I'm going to pick something that's not too far in the past. I'm going to pick Shaft. That's right. I'm going to talk about Shaft.
What you talking
Shut
about?
Shut your mouth.
Talk about Shaft.
Thank you.
If you liked black exploitation films, and if you liked Shaft, then you will probably like the comic Shaft. I thought it was a really decent recreation of the character. Just to be aware, this is not a comic for children. Every time an ethnic race is mentioned, it is always using the derogatory term for that race as many as possible. I mean, this is very gritty 70s trying to get that feel.
What is the derogatory term for white people?
Cracker?
All right.
Honky?
What'd you say?
Honky. That's our word for us.
Oh, honky.
Turkey? What?
You jive turkey.
I really like this comic. The character was very compelling. It's kind of an interesting kind of origin story for the character of Shaft. I recommend it. I liked it. Once again, not for the kids. This is, you know, you have to take everything with a grain of salt. It's trying to be written as if it were taking place in the 70s in some of the not so great parts of New York City.
Is this the David Walker series?
This is written by David Walker with art by, I am going to murder this name, Bilqui Evely. Came out from Dynamite last year.
Yeah, this is David Walker is the guy who's doing Power Man and Iron Fist that I love.
Yeah,
he's great.
It's a really good story.
Is it as good as the Hebrew
not
Hammer?
Not PC at all.
Just asking.
What?
I said, is it as good as the Hebrew Hammer? Because I like the Jukebox Station.
It's,
you know.
Yeah, it's a little different.
We should do a whole show on the Hebrew Hammer. That was a great superhero movie that was very close to not being a superhero movie, but it's still a pretty superhero movie.
I'll bet.
It was Hebrew Shaft. I mean, that's what it was.
It was. Man, now right. I want to go out and watch It's a Wonderful Life.
Why?
Because all the bells ringing in your background?
That's just my dog shaking his head in disbelief that LT's still on a podcast. Leave him be. That's okay, Johnny. Diabetes will kill LT soon enough.
Wow.
Feeling the love.
This is why we can't have nice things, Tom.
We can cut that part out.
No, I'm going to leave it in so people know right. What a dick you are.
Thanks.
Nice. Okay. All right. So, okay.
I'm muting. I offered to give him a free gym membership. What can I do?
Stop wishing for his death.
Oh,
too much.
Yeah, well, that's what I could do.
Yeah, you could do that.
All right. Now I'm going to feel like a dith talking about social justice movement, but okay, here we go. All right, well, that brings me to my section, which is social justice and civil relevance in comic books. And today I'd like to talk about it. 1945, going all the way back, like I said, to 1945, an issue of the Green Llama. I've talked about the Green Llama a couple times in the past. He's a lot like, say, a Green Hornet character. In this particular issue, there's a little bit at the very end, a single page where they're talking about whether or not African-American soldiers should be included in the military. It's only a four-panel thing that I'm going to go over. I'm going to go over it quickly, but I think it's very important. And I'm going to post this also on our Twitter page. And it's a typical GI, a white guy, saying, why should I? I don't like Negroes. See, because I'm better than they are. What are they going to do about it? They got to be kept in their place. And in the forefront is an African-American soldier who can hear exactly what's being said. Later, the next frame is two Nazis, and that same soldier can overhear them saying, in broken German, in English, if we can keep on dividing the enemy in the race war against them, we can win the war. And the other Nazi says, mit den Americans is easy. They have the Jim Crow laws already. The soldier hearing this realizes what a jerk he's been. And the next panel, he says, he befriends Bill, the African-American soldier in question, and says, give us a couple of ice cream sodas. And if any of you guys want to go see a movie with Bill and me, you better shake the lead up. And he has his arm around Bill. Green Llama, in the little wrap-up, says, everyone can't fly to Berlin as the Green Llama did, but they can show others that only through equality of races and creeds can we weld the unity of a truly great country. See you next month. That was 1945. And if that's not progressive, I don't know what it is. Sometimes when I go back and I read some of these comic books like this, it gives me a lot of hope that we were at least thinking to a time when we can have actual, interracial integration, seamless, and, we were actually thinking about it for a long time, and we're starting to see it happen. This gives me a lot of hope, and I get a real swelling in my chest when I read something this from as far back as 1945. And I hope you guys – you probably can't buy the Green Llama because the last issue I saw that was just a beat-up one was $170. But it's worth finding it on Comixology or finding it in a PDF or something. And some of these are great reads, and this is something I really think people should read.
It kind of reminds me of All-Star Comics number 16, where the Justice Society talks about race relations in that one also, which mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll talk about at some point later on.
I'm sure I will. I know that comic book very well. All right.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. Dark Horse did a collection of Green Llama comics, so that's where I bought the collected edition, the hardcover. You can kind of find it if you go digging around on eBay or Amazon.
Oh, I'll definitely do that. I haven't been able to find a lot of these. I bought a couple of these relevant issues for my collection, but some of them have been a little bit, especially like number 1 through 5, have been a little bit out of my price range. So thanks for telling me there's a collective edition. I didn't know there was one out there. Well, that brings us through most of our segments, except for our interview. Mikey, do we have an interview this week?
Yeah, we have two folks who are on a podcast called Strange and Unusual, and that's spelled Strange – the letter N and Unusual. And you can check it out at strangeandunusual.com, where they do old-timey radio shows, but they write and produce and act out all of it themselves. They even have their own Foley artist. I met them over at Comicpalooza. Great bunch of people. You should go check it out. Their ongoing series is about a egotistical vampire. It's very funny. Again, it's strangeandunusual.com, and we are going to put a link to their website on our website, outsidethelongbox.com. But for now, let them tell you about their podcast.
Hey, this is Mike with the Long Box Guys, and I am here interviewing the creative forces behind strangeandunusual.com. Could you introduce yourselves and tell us what you do?
Hi, my name is C. Paris. I am the creator and head writer for Friend of the Family, the flagship show for Strange and Unusual Productions.
Hi, I'm Nicholas Petkowski. I'm a writer. I'm one of the producers and a voice actor on several shows on strangeandunusual.com.
And could you tell us about your flagship show?
Yes. Friend of the Family is our take on modern vampire mythos, featuring a young teenage girl hunter with a vampire who has to serve her. Our twist is that they don't hook up.
All right. And where can people go to listen to your radio broadcast?
There are several ways. You can visit our website at strangeandunusual.com. That's strange, the letter N, unusual.com. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and I believe that's covering the main points.
You can also find the feed on Libsyn, which is the RSS feed. That's pretty much it.
And it's all free, correct?
Yes, it is 100% free.
And you've got a season, one season under your belt, or you're working on the second season? How's that going?
We are currently 6 episodes into our second season, so we've got like a season and a half for people to currently listen to. And we do actually put out new episodes on the first and third Friday of every month for Friend of the Family. In between those times, we do have other content, such as Letters to Asmodeus and The Dark Files. So we do release new content for Strange and Unusual every week on Friday.
So if you're driving around and you want to listen to an old-time radio broadcast, this is the perfect podcast to download and listen to whenever you get a chance. And tell everybody again what's the name of the show and how they can get it.
Okay, my show is Friend of the Family, found on strangeandunusual.com. Again, that's strange, the letter N, unusual.com. Our episodes are Friend of the Family is between 22 and just under 30 minutes. Our other show, The Dark Files, is about 15 minutes, so it can fit any commute.
Excellent. And do you have any social media platforms other than just the strangeandunusual.com?
You can find us on Facebook at Strange and Unusual Productions or on Twitter at Friend OT Family. And that's pretty much it for the moment.
Now, how did you get roped into the geek culture? What was your gateway drug, per se?
Well, I personally was born into it. I was raised by geeks, so I kind of grew up in geek culture. My mother is a lifelong Trekkie since the show came out, and my father is actually a little into the occult. It's kind of interesting, like, the Venn diagram between geek culture and occult has a very fat middle for some reason.
Star Wars and anime, actually, and recently getting more into the occult, so that's a very true statement, Crystal.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was terrific. Mikey, make sure you send me the information so I can put it on our Twitter feed, too, because I'm sure people want to listen to more of that. That sounds like a lot of fun. It reminds me a lot of Beyond Belief. If anyone's been listening to those are terrific, too. No one's listening to Beyond Belief?
No.
Really? Oh, I'll send you some links to that, too. Those are really good.
Send me some links.
Yeah, Padgett Brewster does one of the voices, and she's hilarious. Beyond belief. All right, and that brings us to one of our favorite segments, which is plugs. Tommy, you love plugging stuff. Who are you going to plug, Tommy?
Let me think long and hard about this. How about IanLino.com? IanLino.com, purveyor of fine T-shirts and geeky stuff, including Johnny Skywalker rocks glasses. That's right. You can be drinking your scotch out of a Johnny Skywalker glass.
And, which reminds me, I definitely need to buy one.
Tom, you're wearing an Ian Lino shirt right now.
I am. I'm wearing the Your Authority Is Not Recognized in Fort Kickass shirt, and I'm loving it.
They do make fine T-shirts.
Well, I would like to promote our very own Twitter page because, by God, I'm in charge of it, and I think everyone should do it. And that's Outside the Long Box, at the Long Box, guys. Tweet to us. Tell us whatever you like to tell us. And we're glad to answer questions online and direct you to some very fun stuff. And welcome Liam Sharp. We started following us because we mentioned him on the last episode.
And also, we should once again mention that if you contact us at luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com, you have a chance of winning a graphic novel. This month's graphic novel is Saga.
Yeah, you should definitely do that.
Tell us which of the four of us are your favorite podcasters.
I don't want to know.
You don't want to know. You're afraid to find out which Mr. Tom is the favorite podcaster of Dylan.
Mikey, are you going to shout out to anyone else?
Yeah, KirbyCrackle.com, or excuse me, KirbyCrackleMusic.com. Kirby Crackle is our band who provides all the music for us. And I'd also like to plug Movies Made Me, the podcast. So you can check that out on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. MoviesMadeMe.com is her website. And Art by Dave, you can check that out. We are actually going to have an additional podcast this week, part two of our Con Man Season 2 Extras series, where I interview a whole bunch of other people for that podcast.
Oh, terrific. Josh,
a very addition of our own podcast.
Josh, you got anything you'd like to plug away?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Terrificon, which will be at Mohegan Sun in Connecticut. We may have a table there. We may be speaking there. We'll see later on. But for right now, go to Terrificon. Kevin Smith and crew will be there, as well as some of our other favorites, Michael Kudlitz, who I went to a tequila event to. He's a great guy. Carmen Bicondova, who is incredibly hot. A swath of other people who will be there. So check out Terrificon and Mohegan Sun if you're in the Northeast. It's going to be a nice con, low-key. Ticket prices are reasonable. And you can do some gambling while you're there, like Kilowog.
When is that, Josh?
It's not his sector. It's
definitely not his sector. It is August 19th to 21st at Mohegan Sun in wherever Mohegan Sun is in Connecticut.
It's in Connecticut.
Some town. Yeah, it's a town in Connecticut near there.
And there's a bus that'll take me straight there from the corner to the corner right here.
Tommy,
bucks.
I'll drive you. I'll
you
drive you, Tommy.
You would have a 67-year-old person in your neighborhood right on that bus, Tom.
That's exactly what it is.
So as long as we're talking about cons, we should talk about Omnicon at the Brandywine 100 Library in Wilmington, Delaware. on Sunday, October 16th. 2016, tentatively planned from 1 to 5. They're going to be having a day of comics, fandom, food trucks, and fun. It's a public library, and in addition to the Long Box guys, there's also going to be Mark D. White, also known as the Comics Professor, who's going to be there. So I know I will not be able to make it because I have a wedding commitment, but you three guys are going to be there, right?
I think so.
That's I think all three of us are going to give it a shot, yeah. I've always said, anybody who wants us to talk about comics, especially when it comes to comics and stereotypes and horrible stereotypes and civil rights and social justice movements, we will be there. All you pretty much have to do is say our name in a mirror three times in the dark, and the Long Box guys will show up. So don't worry, we're coming for that one.
As long as it's affordable.
We'll be able to afford the airfare. But Wilmington's definitely. We can go. We're in. I'm in.
We're in.
Yeah. Instead of the mirror, they should probably write to luckybastard@outsidethelongbox.com, though.
Well, that'll about do it for us here on Thinking Outside the Long Box. Thanks for listening in. And remember, guys, don't take the energy and the time to diss what you hate. Just promote what you love.
I pack my clothes and grab my single issues and wrap them up tight and make a list so my collection's complete. Girls and dudes.
Cage.